This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today family of sites. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and also the host of the rebooted original Draft Breakdown podcast. And we're on episode 303. This is the first of our draft preview series, as we're going to go. We've got 3 weeks till the draft. This week, we are going to be talking offensive prospects, plus a little bit of news with the Cardinals. Next week, we will be on talking defensive prospects. And then the week of the draft, we will be doing our yearly mock draft, where we try to pick out the picks for not only the Cardinals, but for the entire first round of the draft, which is going to be interesting to see after the first two picks, maybe the first three picks. But Seth, it is officially draft season. If you want to give a plug for your show, obviously you told me that it was a good one. You guys just recorded on Monday night. I've caught the last couple of episodes as well. Mel Kiper's mock draft with Tutu Atwell in the second round made me shake my head a little bit after listening to what you and Justin had to say. But tell us what's on your show from this week that you guys recorded.
Yeah, this week it was all about offensive line, and we had a special guest, Sully Chiefs, from Twitter. Sully is a former collegiate player, does a lot of stuff with offensive line. He's big into the offensive line Twitter group with like Duke Manyweather and Jeff Schwartz, Owen Reese, Brandon Thorne, those guys. So he's a great resource to have. And we talked with Sully about the offensive line class. And you know, everybody kind of knows the names of the top five or six guys. So Sully went in depth on five guys to know past round one and really round two and three even. His claim to fame is he's found guys like Quentin Spain, who's been in the league for, I think, six seasons now, been a starter for a lot of them, as an undrafted or real late round guy, like seventh round. And then Wyatt Teller, who's a starter and Pro Bowl level player out of Cleveland now. So he's really good at identifying these kind of day three guys that have a chance to play and stick. And he gave us some great names that we'll even mention tonight on the show to discuss, you know, potential fits for the Arizona Cardinals on day three with those wonderful seventh round picks that they have.
Absolutely. So you can catch the original Draft Breakdown podcast pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts. But not only will you get you got one free show a week that they've been doing, but if you want to be one of their patrons on Patreon, you can also get a bonus episode for $2 a month. You can get their bonus, unlock their bonus episode. And for another $2 a month at $4, their generational patron, you will not only get that, but you'll get access to their draft written content that both Seth and Justin have, which is a fantastic deal. In addition to reading all the other stuff that we have at Cards Wire and Revenge of the Birds, it's fantastic stuff. So Seth, in this edition of the show, listeners, what we've got, we're going to talk about the offensive prospects. We do have a little bit of Cardinals news to break down, as the Cardinals made an official the signing of former Pittsburgh Steelers running back James Conner. We're going to talk about Conner a little bit and go into the running back class. We're going to kind of ignore quarterback. We're not going to completely do it. We're going to push it to the back. So we'll talk about James Conner and the running backs. We'll be talking about kind of with each position group. We'll talk about the guys to know in the first round if they're a possibility for the Cardinals, then kind of go day two and day three players to know. From there, we'll go to receiver, to tight end, which has a, you know, an unlikely but intriguing trade-up scenario. We'll go offensive line and then wrap things up with the quarterbacks. So let's start with the running backs, in particular James Conner. He visited the Cardinals on Monday, took a physical, which almost always means there's an imminent deal coming. It was reported Tuesday morning that he had agreed to the deal. The Cardinals announced it. 1-year contract. The numbers came out for the deal later in the afternoon. It's a very reasonable deal. A guy that who's been a Pro Bowler and been a starting running back, they get him for $1.75 million total, fully guaranteed. It's just a little bit more than the league minimum at $1.25 million in guaranteed salary, and he gets $500,000 up front. And that does a couple of things. One, they lock down, they grab a veteran running back, which I was convinced they were always going to do to join with Chase Edmonds. You give a nice 1-2 punch in terms of Connor and Chase Edmonds. Two, contrasting and complementary different body styles. And, you know, Steve Keim loves his compensatory picks. As of right now, they're projected to have 3 comp picks, but at the deal they got Connor, it will not affect that. They still will have 3 comp picks next year. They get a big body, and it doesn't, for me, change anything about what could happen in the draft.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. It's kind of what we talked about all offseason, is that all their moves have been to improve, but none of them have prohibited them from drafting a player. I mean, we talked about it off the air before the show. There's literally one position they will not draft in the first round, and that's quarterback. I mean, that's literally it. Obviously, I'm not going to draft a kicker or punter, but, you know,
or
just from the
snapper, of course.
Yeah. But from the realistic starting positions on the team, their quarterback's it. They can literally go in any direction, and it would make sense because they've built a team that can compete in 2021. They've also allowed themselves the freedom to make moves and changes to the roster in 2022 and beyond. And so a guy... even signing a James Conner doesn't mean that you can't go after a Najee Harris or in round one or a Javonte Williams in round two. Because while they may not see a ton of carries this year, they're going to be on the roster next year. And guess who's not? James Conner or Chase Edmonds, for that matter.
Very possibly. So, both have one. Well, Conner signed for 1 year. Edmonds is down to his last year of his contract.
And so it's just, I think it's been a smart, intelligent way of building a team. One, with the unknown of the salary cap issues. And then two, basically giving yourself a 2-year window to really compete until you have to sign. Or, I mean, we're all saying sign because we're assuming that he's going to continue to play well at a Pro Bowl level, but you know, really until you have to decide on what you're doing with Kyler Murray, whether that is paying him $45 million a year or if you're going to start over, which, you know, in that case would just mean that you blow up the team anyways, right? So they've really, you know, given themselves this 2-year window to compete and then kind of go from there,
right? I like stylistically because, you know, the player that I kind of had pegged kind of as a sleeper for the Cardinals to sign was Le'Veon Bell. James Conner, though, he's younger. He's been more productive. He's reputation-wise, is a higher character individual and still has the same connection to James Saxon as Le'Veon Bell. And so it came down because as running backs kept coming off the market, you're thinking, who are they going to get? Because were they just going to wait till after the draft? Which just didn't feel like was a very Steve Keim thing to do. I was convinced the entire time they were going to sign a veteran back. They did do it. Connor probably, if this were a different offseason, maybe gets more money. But that's just the reality. There are, I mean, obviously, he has never played a full 16-game season yet. He's missed at least 2 games every year. And now we're going to be going to a 17-game season. But what I really like about it is that because with Connor and Edmonds, you now have yourself set up to where neither one of them needs to be necessarily the alpha. They could do they could use Connor in the Kenyon Drake workhorse and keep it Edmonds in his same role, or they can ratchet up Edmonds a little bit and kind of split it evenly. Connor, what the Connor offers is a much bigger body. It's 6'1", 233 compared to Edmonds at 5'9", 210. Now he's a built young man, Edmonds is. But they have the, it'll be interesting to see, and hopefully with the addition that they made to the offensive line, that short yardage game will improve. Connor is also can catch the ball to the backfield. He's decent in protection. So you really get a nice all-around player who hasn't had a breakout year yet, and so he didn't cost too much. And then I like the move a lot. I think it's a perfect fit. I just never thought that Connor would be around based on what I expected when free agency started.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we go from here, is that we talked about Connor two or three different times, and as guys like Carlos Hyde and those veteran kind of big backs went off the market, we assumed Connor would follow suit. I mean, we can talk about this now, that we knew, what, about a week ago, a week and a half ago, we got a tip that this was coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jess and I don't break news. We get a lot of information, and we just kind of, we prepare ourselves so that when it drops, we're usually the first two sites that have it.
And this would lead, this is why James Conner led thy article about veteran running back options that were still on the board when I wrote about it, I think, on Sunday. When I hear something that could be coming, I don't report it. I say, here's an option that's out there. That actually kind of happened last year with the DeAndre Hopkins trade. And so I wrote a piece of, well, if DeAndre, what if, and that's because I had heard that the trade might be coming. It's nothing actionable I could report, because that's not my, I'm not Adam Schefter, I'm not Jay Glazer, I'm not even John Gambadoro. So that's.
But yeah, so we knew this was kind of coming, and we said to ourselves, oh, this makes sense. I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, It just made sense from a fit and style standpoint. While he is a bigger back, he's not necessarily, you know, a hair on fire runner, but he's a patient, physical runner, kind of falls forward for those yards that the Cardinals have lacked in the last couple years, even when Kenyon Drake was running at 100%. So I think if you look at it from that perspective, it always made sense. And then when we got the information, our question was simply, when was it going to happen? Was it going to happen once comp picks were locked in? Because that happens typically right around the week of the draft. Those comp picks for the next year lock. And so we know how much Steve Keim loves comp picks.
Those two extra seventh rounders he's going to have are just going to be game changers, I'm sure.
And so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, that was the next question. Okay, when, and so that was our speculation. I mean, I even put it out on Twitter, like, is the question when it was reported that he was coming in for a visit wasn't whether they were going to sign him or not. We had already kind of gotten that information. The question had become, when are they going to sign him? Like, when do they make it official, and when do they basically give you, give us the information that they're going to sign Connor? Will it be after those, or will it be for a really cheap salary like he ended up signing for?
Yeah. Now let's transition from that to what that means for the running back class in the draft this year, because the Cardinals picking at number 16. I will admit, if you talk to most people, and especially Cardinals fans, the idea of drafting a running back at number 16 overall really kind of makes them feel a little uncomfortable. That said, whether they draft him at number 16 or if they could somehow trade back four or five spots and it'll make it feel better, maybe, they have options both in the first round, in the second round, And then there's guys that you could look at later in the draft on day three. Now, granted, the Cardinals, they don't have a pick in the third and the fourth round. So there's going to be a drastic, unless they make a move, there's going to be a big chunk of talent that they're not going to have access to. But let's talk at the guys at the top of the draft. There are more or less two consensus top first-round backs that you could really consider right now. And that would be Alabama's Najee Harris and Clemson's Travis Etienne. Etienne is on the record as saying a dream scenario would be to have the Cardinals to draft a number 16 overall. He makes a nice fit. He's kind of, to me, isn't he kind of a shinier version of Chase Edmonds, who was productive at a much bigger program and was healthier, right? Isn't that kind of what he was?
Yeah, and so, you know, it's one of those things. He's a hard comparison to fit when you look at pro style or pro day comparisons and all of those things. What I've come to kind of view him as, and I just changed phones, so I don't have all of my notes on these guys, but what I view him as a high end is a Chris Johnson, a CJ2K without that 4.24 speed.
He's fast.
Travis
he's
Etienne
fast.
Is a 4.3.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a high 4.3 guy. So, I mean, let's not pick too many nits here, but he's that's how he plays. He's very linear. But he knows how to get small and get through holes. And then when he hits the open field, it just seems like nobody touches him.
Correct.
And he does it both in the run and the pass game. He's a very confident runner. And I think that's one of the things when you watch him more than anything, you see a guy that's confident in his running style and believes in himself. And so Etienne would be a dream fit, maybe, maybe not. I mean, I think he's one of the better all-around fits for what the Cardinals want to do stylistically. And we've seen how much they lean on the running back. And let's be honest, they've never really looked to do it by committee. They've always looked to do it as one guy getting 80 to 85% of the touches and then that other guy getting those other 15 to 20% of the touches. It's not a, 60-40 share. It's more like an 80-20 share. And that's, I think, the one question on Etienne. He beefed up to 210. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but he beefed up to 210 and still hit his 4.4 mark and then kind of called it a day at his workout. And that made everybody go, okay. But the reality is he's not going to play at 210. He's going to play at probably 205-ish. So that's what I said. When you look at it, stylistically, a high-end comp, a best-case scenario type thing would be like a Chris Jones 2.0, where you're just talking about a guy that can produce, massive Pro Bowl, All-Pro type seasons. That's a huge high-end comp. When you look at low-end comps, Andre Ellington's probably too low end of a comp. He's a much better athlete. I wish I had my old phone because we had these comps laid out, and I can't remember who it was that I had as kind of the low end comp. But he's a guy. Etienne's a guy that's gonna be successful in this league, and the question is gonna be how successful will he be, and where will that success, range from? And I think for Etienne, Chris Johnson's a really high platform to reach. And so that's why I think, having a high and low end comp is important, because then you say, hey, he's going to fall in this area. He may not reach all pro Chris Johnson level, but he's probably going to be above, like Devontae Freeman type of guy. He's going to be better than that. So that's probably where you're looking at for him as your range of outcomes as a player. And I mean, yeah, you don't want to take a running back in the first round, but if you're telling me that you're going to get a guy that's going to produce for 6-7 years, isn't that hard to pass up?
Honestly. Well, and let's do a little bit of a history lesson, because if we look back to down back to 2007, Kevin Wisenhunt, when he was new head coach, their first draft, the guy that, and they were picking fifth overall, they passed on Adrian Peterson, and guess what? Everyone regrets it ever since, partially because it was Levi Brown. But I'm not saying Travis Etienne is that guy, but actually what probably is the more sure thing is the probably my running back one, probably everyone's, and that would be Alabama's Najee Harris. He just seems like a can't miss back because of his size, because of his speed, because of his running style, the addition that he can do in the passing game too. It seems like, well, stylistically, he might not be exactly what the Cardinals want. He really fits everywhere. Like, you almost feel like there's no way for him to fail as a pick based on what we've seen from other Alabama running backs, right?
Yeah, and you look at his kind of stylistic and Felix Jones was the name I was looking for, by the way, for Travis Etienne. So same type of, you know, again, electric runner, didn't have a great career, but ended up being a good back for a couple of seasons. Like, again, a good range of outcomes for a first round pick, right? As for Harris, you look at Harris and man, he's just so smooth. For a guy his size, the way his feet work are just unbelievable. And then you combine that with the otherworldly athleticism that we've seen with the hurdles and the jumps and the start and stops. And then he does bring a physicality. He's not Derrick Henry. No. I think that's the biggest thing people... Najee Harris is a freak of nature. He's not Derrick Henry, who's just a different type of guy altogether. But who Najee Harris could be, again, high-end comps are just so tough. And so, you know, again, I can't stress this enough. You can't expect a guy to reach that level of play. But he reminds me a lot of Le'Veon Bell. You know, a guy, a similar size, 6'3", 120-ish pounds, patient in his running style, despite the size. I think that's the thing that you watch Najee and you are almost blown away by. His patience to set things up and then the ability to go quickly as they open up. And that's something that is just so hard to find in any back, let alone backs of that size. I think you kind of hit it on the head. He's basically can't miss.
as hard as I will say, Cardinals history with running backs early in the draft is bad. Like, you got one good year out of Beanie Wells. You go back, Garrison Hurst, he was a great player who wasn't great for the Cardinals. Anthony Thompson was awful for the Cardinals. You go back, it's like first, second round running backs of Cardinals are historically bad. They are much better at picking up late round guys who have the same 1 year production and then get expectations and then fail later. It's just how it goes. But the way I feel about the number 16 pick, if he's kind of in I've got a group of players that I would prefer to have. I have no problem with Najee Harris. I'm not as gung-ho about Travis Etienne. If they go back a few spots, I'm okay with. But even then, if you think if we're going to lean into this offense, which they have kind of done this offseason, why not make this offense not just good, but crazy good?
Yeah, and I think that's the question. And I'm, you know... I think you're going to get even more resistance now because of the James Conner signing, but we have to look at the James Conner signing for what it truly is. it's a veteran presence backup signing. That's all it is. At $1.75 million, yes, I know it's fully guaranteed, but that is veteran insurance type money. I mean, they paid J.R. Sweezy more. Like, let's understand what we're talking about here. So that's virtually getting a guy for free at this rate.
And it's not a guy who you're going to come in and say, you're going to take carries over Chase. They are committing to Chase as a Chase Edmonds as a starter / main contributor. Only they have a guy who could also do the same thing if Chase isn't great or Chase gets hurt and things like that. And Cliff Kingsbury has been on the record. He would like to have three guys he's comfortable with. He didn't end up with three guys he was comfortable with a year ago. And we thought maybe that would be Eno Benjamin. That never happened. And I'm not convinced that Eno Benjamin is any part of their plans moving forward, which makes me sad. But that said, those are the two guys. Now, there is another player that some will say should be a first-round consideration, and that is Javonte Williams out of North Carolina. Seth has thoughts on him because of his running style, the potential for injury. Now, but he's not a consensus first-round pick. Some people love him. You look on some analytics sites, Doug Farrar for Touchdown Wire believes he should be running back one, compares him to Nick Chubb. Others have him as a second-round pick. Where does Williams fit on the scale for you, on the spectrum?
Yeah, you know, Williams is a guy that I like him, and that's, you know, I think that gets missed when you talk about guys in a quote-unquote negative aspect. But the reality is, what worries me about Javonte Williams more than anything else is his running style. We see backs like this all the time that run, you know, whatever metaphor you want to say, with their hair on fire, you know, like they're shot out of cannon, any of those superlatives that you can use. And when I watch Javonte Williams, that's what I see, is a guy that runs angry and runs with a power that not a lot of guys possess. The concern for me is his size. And at what do you measure in at 210, 211, 212, one of those things, right in that range.
Yeah, I think it was 212, which is much less than he played at, right?
Listed at, yeah. So you got a guy that, you know, measured in similar to a guy like, you know, a little heavier than a guy like Tevin Coleman, who, you know, you wrote about it. His numbers were strikingly similar to Chase Edmonds.
Right. His physical comps are real similar.
And so when you look at him stylistically, he runs a lot to me like Chris Carson out of Seattle, which, again, we've talked about Chris Carson on this show. Very good back. This is not a knock on him at all in any way, shape, or form. Testing numbers were actually very similar as well. Carson measured in, I think, at 210 at his pro day, if I remember right. And so when you look at Carson, the one thing that's kind of hurt him in his NFL career is being banged up. And so when you look at Carson, I see a similar type of future. I think he's going to be a good running back. Carson got a good second contract from Seattle, which is, you know, unheard of for running backs nowadays. And he's always played extremely well against the Arizona Cardinals. We know that too. But when I look at the running style and the games missed by Carson for these nagging injuries, I see a similar type of future for Williams. So that's not to say I wouldn't draft him. It's just to say, I don't know if at 49, he's the type of runner I want there. Now, he would add a physicality that is absolutely not in the running back room at all. I just don't know if that's, you know, where you want to take him, because remember, Chris Carson was drafted in like the sixth or seventh round.
Now, granted, he was not nearly as productive in college as Javonte was, though.
Right. And then I was going to say about ETN, you had mentioned trading back. So I want to, so basically, I don't know if you ranked yours, but I mean, I've done my running back rankings. And so, you know, my one is Najee Harris, my two is Travis Etienne, my three is Javonte Williams. Harris is the only guy that I like where he's projected at going in that, you know, top 25 range. I like Travis Etienne. I really, really do. I don't think I would pick him in the first round. That's not to say he can't be worthy of a first round pick. I just don't know if I would. And that's kind of how I feel about Javonte Williams. Like, I'm not going to dislike the pick if they take him at 49. I just would prefer a different player at 49 in that case. Now, if you could somehow get Etienne at 49, I think that would be...
That would be... Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and then... And like, you know, as you're saying, this trade down. So say you keep 16 and you don't take Najee or Travis Etienne, and then at 49, a team really wants to come up and get, you know, a offensive tackle that we'll discuss later. And so you can move down and pick up an extra fourth, you know, kind of bridge that gap between 49 and what is it, 160?
Yeah.
You know, give yourself one pick in the next 130 or 110, sorry. And so I think if you were to do that, and then you got Javonte in that, you know, late 50s, early 60s range, I think I would like that a lot more.
And then, obviously, not having a pick in the third or the fourth round will probably take them out of the picture for some guys like Ohio State's Trey Sermon, the other North Carolina back, Michael Carter. Those are all some mid-round guys. Are there any other guys that you might that they're just not going to have a shot at? Because I want to focus more on, for the last couple minutes of this segment, day three running backs. Who might actually end up being really productive.
The other names that, you know, you mentioned at Michael Carter, Trey Sermon, Khalil Herbert may not make it there. Either he's a guy that played at Virginia Tech last year after transferring from Kansas, where he was productive as well. So you've got, you know, him, Kenneth Gainwell is an interesting one. Another one of those Memphis running backs that kind of is a two-way guy. I don't know if he'll be there. Because right now, I mean, we can give you the names of guys in rounds four and five, but the reality is they just don't have a pick. So
right. Now, we go to day three. So later day three. Names of that, there's a name that for me is super intriguing because I saw him before the 2020 season in mock drafts in rounds one and round two, and that would be Oklahoma State's Chuba Hubbard. He does offer a you know, he was what the most prolific, he had led the nation in rushing in 2019, if I'm correct, and over 2,000 yards, has some size, has production, he can kind of do it all, but you know, his now being talked as a day three back, and he would be one of those, a really super intriguing guy. If they didn't go running back early, he would be a super intriguing one to add because he fits the mold of a guy who, like, if you're going philosophy of running backs, draft them late, use them up, let them go, Hubbard would probably fit that to a T.
Yeah, and Hubbard's one of those guys that was talked about in that day two range last year and then decided to go back, and it probably cost him, similar to some of these other guys that we'll discuss later. And so you know, you look at it, and I think Hubbard's a guy, he may end up, because of just his speed, going in round four, But he's a guy that could be available at that 160th pick. So if you don't make any moves, obviously that's the way we have to kind of go right now. We can mention names, but the reality is he's one of those guys that could be available at 160. Another guy to kind of just keep in the back of your mind that's interesting is the kid out of UCLA, Felton.
Dimitri Felton, yes.
Yeah, he's another kind of intriguing, I guess would be the way to put it. I like Kylan Hill out of Mississippi State, another guy that opted out this year, another linear guy I think could fit. And then one more guy that I think is going to get drafted higher than people are expecting. And if you do listen to the original Draft Breakdown podcast and the extras that we do, Justin talked about this guy, Elijah Mitchell, out of Louisiana Lafayette. And when you look at Elijah Mitchell, he's a little bit smaller than what he was listed at coming out. But he ran a legitimate 4.32 at his pro day. I think it might have gotten changed to a 4.38. I can't remember, but it was a sub 4.4. And he put up insane numbers while at Louisiana Lafayette. And so he's a guy, again, to know in that round 5, 6, 7 area if the Cardinals, you know, don't attack running back early in the draft.
We'd spend a whole lot on running backs, but there's other positions to still talk about. So coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's talk about the wide receivers. Again, breaking it down from day one, day two, type day three guys. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Receiver is also a possibility for the Cardinals with the 16th pick. There are, you know, obviously, when you're looking at receivers, the top guy, pretty much consensus, Ja'Marr Chase. He's not going to be anywhere. He's not going to be available. His production and then the speed. My goodness, he blew everyone away at that pro day. Now, you've got the other top guys, the Alabama guys. You got Jalen Waddle. You got Devontae Smith. And then other guys that are getting first-round talk, you've got Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota, Kadarius Toney out of Florida. There's kind of those are, if you go around the everyone's talking about the draft, those are kind of the five guys that you hear getting most of the first-round talk. As we can expect, Chase probably not going to be on the board. Waddle and Smith, maybe one of them will be on the board. And if they're not, then you go Bateman and Toney. What's kind of the difference between Smith and Waddle in terms of, because it feels like it's just your preferred taste, basically what your preference is a receiver, because there's really not a big difference in terms of ceiling, right? And production, both should be great. It's just which one you prefer. But after those two, so talk about those two first. So what's the upside for both?
So Waddle is just a different kind of speed on the field. Henry Ruggs ran a 4.28 last year, and there's videos of them racing, and they're basically, I mean, it's a wash. So he's a legitimate 4.3 type of receiver. He's also built a little differently than, you know, those guys usually are. He's a little thicker in the chest and waist area, almost in a non, you know, derogatory way, squatty, so to speak. Smith is, as we all know, a beanpole. He's 6'1". Rumors abound that he's less than 180 pounds. He's more similar to the Chad Johnson Reggie Wayne type of receiver, which you're saying, oh, you're talking about Hall of Famer, so he must be really good. Well, no, I'm just talking about from a build and style standpoint. He's probably a mid 4.4, low 4.4 guy, but at that weight, you know, that's not blazing, but he's more than fast enough, and he's a clean route runner. He understands the nuances of the game. I think when you look at it, the reality is Smith's weight is a concern when you're talking about receivers over 6 feet tall and under 180 pounds. It's just a very small group. And so that's where I think this Smith question marks will eventually just land, is because it's just not something you see.
Although, if you're worried about toughness, there's one thing that we can see. He returned punts, which is not something that the punt returning punts is not for the weary or the weak. So we do know in terms of toughest, there's not an issue. It'll just depend on whether it will be an issue of durability.
Correct. And so, you know, I think that's what separates the two. I personally would think that the Cardinals would be foolish to pass on either if they were available at 16. That's how talented they both are. So when you look at it from that perspective, you know, I don't think you can go wrong with either of them. They're just like, as you said, they're different flavors of receivers. Then you got to get into that next tier. And so that's where it's likely the Cardinals will have to choose from. Rashad Bateman, again, another one of those guys that was listed at 6'2", 220, and then the measurements came out, or 6'2", 210, and the measurements came out, and he's 6 feet, 190. So being a 4.39 guy is fantastic. I don't think anybody's going to deny that, but it's a lot different when you're talking about a 4.39 guy at 6'2", 210, and a 4.39 guy that's 6'1". 190 pounds, or 6 feet and 190 pounds. What separates Bateman is he's just an incredibly talented route runner. He's consistent in how he runs routes and how he creates separation. And so I think with that and the fact that he catches basically everything thrown his way, it makes him a really easy guy to like. The question becomes, you know, are you wanting to take wide receiver 4 as the number one player or as your first round pick? Now, I will say this, that worked out. I think he was wide receiver 3. Or no, he was wide receiver 4, Justin Jefferson last year, you know, and that worked out extremely well for Minnesota. They have no complaints. So it doesn't mean that he can't be great. It's just, you know, he's clearly a step below those other 3. From there, it's just a big mishmash of guys that all have question marks. Probably the next best guy is Terrace Marshall Jr. He's your big play receiver, 6'3", 205-ish pounds. Stylistically, kind of reminds me of A.J. Green. No, I'm not saying he's going to be A.J. Green. But he, you know, he kind of has that same smooth, like, when you watch him run, you're like, man, I wish this guy was faster. And then you're like, oh, he's a 4.39 guy. Like, yes. And it's, I think a lot of it is those long, you know, lanky limbs. He looks like he's at ease when he's running. He doesn't look like he's putting any effort in. So he's just smooth. And he's a victim of circumstance. I mean, you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. Everybody kind of forgot about Terrace Marshall, and all he did was catch, you know, touchdowns, 23 touchdowns in his career in basically 2.5 seasons. 22% of his catches were touchdowns. That's absurd for a third wide receiver, but that's just kind of who he is. Then you've got a slot guy like Elijah Moore. I think Elijah Moore's an excellent player. The question I have is, are you now saying, no, we're not going to give Christian Kirk or Andy Isabella the year in the slot to figure it out? I'm not saying it's right or wrong either way, but I think he's a guy that would be a nice fit if he were to fall to 49. Then you've got another guy that was shockingly small, and that was Rondell Moore. And Rondell Moore came in at 5'7".
Ooh, so fast, super fast, but
sub 4.3 guy, a different type of player altogether. Obviously, this is not a comparison, but he plays like Anquan Boldin did, in the sense of you're like, oh, this dude's not a wide receiver. This dude is a football player. Like, he's not ducking out of bounds. He's not trying to avoid contact. He is looking to run through people. He's looking to create contact and create collisions. I don't know if that's the best thing to do, though, at 5'7 in the NFL.
I mean, Steve Smith, he was a special breed.
Right. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's kind of what your hope is that he becomes, is a Steve Smith like player. But Moore's never stayed healthy at Purdue other than one season. So, you know, same type of question. Kadarius Toney's an interesting one. He's actually been mocked to the Cardinals recently.
Yeah. Pro Football Focus.
A couple of times. And he's, again, he's a different type of player. We were all a little surprised he hit a sub 4.4. Now, I know we've talked about this a little bit. These numbers this year are kind of ridiculous.
Everyone's running 4.4s and 4.3s.
Yeah, and so that's
the question. Fastest draft class ever.
That's the question with Toney. Because he played quicker than, more quick than fast, which isn't a bad thing at all. I mean, he's a make-you-miss guy. The biggest question is he going to be a guy that can catch the ball consistently enough?
Now, a guy that was actually showed up on Mel Kiper's two-round mock draft on Tuesday is another little guy, and that is Louisville's Tutu Atwell. I listened to Seth and Justin on the podcast last week. An interesting case is with that is the fact that he's 155 pounds. And while he's fast, he didn't put like record fast on there. 155 pounds in the second round. That's a super reg. Anyway, the Cardinals have done it before. They did it in the fifth round with J.J. Nelson, and from a small school in UAB, there was also the other factor that he was an elite returner, and probably when he was drafted, no one thought he was going to be much of a receiver. He was only going to be a returner. So Tutu Atwell in the second round is a kind of a crazy notion, but people love speed, and it's hard to get away from that.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I think he's a dynamic player. I don't think you can draft a guy that's a sub 160 player in the first three rounds. Like, I just, maybe with a comp pick in the third round, but I just don't see the way you can justify. I mean, how many sub 160 players, not just played in the NFL, but like made a significant impact? And you talked about J.J. Nelson, like, that's really the guy. I mean, it's just so hard to find people that small in the NFL. 4.32 speed is great, don't get me wrong, but when you're a 4.32 guy and a fingernail takes you down, like, it makes it tough. There's a lot of intriguing day two guys to know as well. Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan, converted cornerback to wide receiver. Tylan Wallace, underwhelmed at a little bit, only running in the 4.4s because of how fast everybody else was this year. Oh man, that's crazy. But he's another name. He's a smaller kind of downfield target at 6'1", 190, but he competes for the ball. And then you got guys like Amari Rodgers, you know, who, another slot guy who is probably going to be a really productive player in this class that people will be like, oh, I can't believe he wasn't drafted earlier. But reality is he doesn't do anything special. He's just a really solid, complete wide receiver that teams need. From there, you know, it's kind of a pick your poison. There's names to know. I really like, if you know, you want a smaller, fast guy like a Jalen Darden out of North Texas. You know, if you want a big athlete, I'm not even going to try. Amar Smith Marset out of Iowa was a kind of a freak of nature. Anthony Schwartz out of Auburn is a legitimate, like, Will Fuller type deep threat with sub 4.3 speed. He's a world class sprinter. And then you got guys like Nico Collins who are probably going to burst onto the scene because they played with just awful quarterbacks at Michigan. So, you know, this wide receiver class is really interesting because I think it's the top three guys. And then there's a group of about five, and then it's, again, a pick your flavor type of, you know, what are you looking for? Are you, you've got your possession guys in you know, Amon St. Ra, and then, you know, Diami Brown. You've got your pure speed guys, you know, like you, like we talked about with Tutu Atwell, and even like an Anthony Schwartz. And then you've got just different type of guys. You know, we haven't even mentioned like Arizona State's Frank Darby was a guy that a lot of people liked. And then he had a really,
really bad Senior Bowl.
Yeah. He had a bad Senior Bowl week. And all of a sudden people started wondering if he was the guy. So, you know, when it's all said and done, I think you just have a different group of players than that to choose from. And the question becomes, if you don't get one of those top three guys at 16, would you take a wide receiver in the first round? And again, let's not project a trade down. Like, would you be comfortable with a Rashad Bateman or a Terrace Marshall at 16?
I'm really iffy on that because after, now granted, we're talking, this is nearly 20 years ago, but we go back to the Bryant Johnson. He was one of the guys when the Cardinals traded back from the where they could have drafted Terrell Suggs, and instead they drafted Calvin Pace and Bryant Johnson. Bryant Johnson, super speedy, and he just, all he had was an okay career. He played for a long time, but didn't really do much. You don't want the Cardinals to get in the middle of the first round, a receiver who's, you want that guy to be borderline Pro Bowl to Pro, like sometimes making the Pro Bowl, but not necessarily every year. That's kind of what you want to see in a first round guy, a guy who can make the Pro Bowl, but doesn't always do it. And how many of those guys are there in this draft? Is even Rashad Bateman that guy? You might talk me into Bateman, but probably none of the other receivers beyond the top three I would feel comfortable picking at 16. That's just me.
And I feel similar in that way. I won't hate Bateman or Marshall because I think they can play, but there are guys that I feel more comfortable with at 49, for instance. And then you look at 49, if let's say the top three guys and then Tony, Bateman, Marshall, and the Moores are gone, like I'm just out at wide receiver. Like even if it's not until round five, maybe you steal an Anthony Schwartz that late in the draft, right? Maybe he falls to 160. I don't know if it happens, but maybe it does. I think there's a bunch of guys that look good, that fit from that 50 to, you know, 100 range, and the Cardinals just don't have any picks in it. And so that makes it tough because I just don't know if I want, you know, like I said, like that next group, the Moores, Bateman, Tony, and Marshall, those are all guys I think they fit anywhere in the draft between 25 and 50. And then the rest of them, you know, then you start going 50 to, you know, 75, then you go 75 to 100. Like that's how those kind of things go. And that, as you mentioned off the air, you don't want to turn it into a Brandon Williams situation where you take him simply because you needed a wide receiver and there was a run. And so you're like, oh, at 49, I'll take a, I'm just going to throw a name out there, you know, a Dyami Brown. And you're like, oh, well, that's, you know, now he's the, you know, 10th wide receiver taken. He just ended up not being very good.
Coming on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're actually going to talk a little bit about tight ends. Believe it or not, Cardinals could use a tight end. What could they do at that position? That's coming on next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. When it comes to the tight end class, there is one, and then there's the other guys. Now, let's play this in our. We know, everyone knows, Kyle Pitts is the cream of the crop. He is arguably, might be the most, what is it, except for maybe, what's his name from the 49ers years ago?
Vernon Davis.
Yeah. There might not be a more athletic or more physically gifted tight end that has ever come out. And we're talking about a tight end, it's very possibly could be top 5, almost certainly will be a top 10 pick, and that is something special. The question is, and from what we've heard from a few sources around, is that the Cardinals are really enamored with Pitts. Might consider him probably their number one player in the draft. NFL.com's NFL Network's General Jeremiah says you can make the argument Kyle Pitts is the number one prospect in this draft. Now, top 10 pick, Cardinals have never, like since Jackie Smith, and Cardinals fans who most Cardinals fans don't know who that is, Hall of Fame tight end who played in St. Louis, the Cardinals have had no really decent or even okay tight ends since then. And yeah, I think Pitts is the type of player who would be a game changer for this offense because he gives you the best of both worlds. He is a great receiving threat. And if you look at the difference makers that we see around the league, Robert Gronkowski has been one, Travis Kelce has been one, George Kittle has been one. And just look at the dynamic nature that they add to the offense. Travis Kelce makes that Kansas City offense something different. I think now, if there is a player to go and trade up for, that would be Kyle Pitts. The problem is the price. Now, I've written about it. There's just using some simulators. If they want to get him at number 4, it's going to cost as much as the cost of the 49ers could go from number 12 to number 3 to get a quarterback. That's, we're talking a trade a first round this year's first and then two more firsts. And if you can get him down to number 8 or number 9, which I don't think he'll get to, then it's more palatable, like this year's first and next year's second. Is there a scenario in which, and do you think the Cardinals are prepared? Because Seth knows this. Back in 2017, there was supposedly a deal. Well, no, we're not going to throw that. That's different. So even back before then, so Blake Bortles draft, that had he fallen far enough, the Cardinals were going to go up to get him. They were, I think they had the 20th pick that year. They were willing to move up to the 8th pick to get him. It didn't happen because he didn't fall that far. But do you think that there's a number for Kyle Pitts where they will say that's worth it?
Yeah, I would think 7.
7 or 8, I think, would be
the number. And I just, so we were discussing this on the podcast actually the other day, is, you know, can you afford, if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, to pass on a offensive tackle? And so when you look at it from that perspective and you say, okay, let's say 4 quarterbacks go the first 4 picks, insane, but hey, things happen. So let's just say 4 quarterbacks go. And then you get to number 5. If the Bengals take the top offensive tackle, whoever that is, at 5, that gives you the Miami Dolphins at 6. Now, I think you and I would agree that we were assuming the Dolphins were going up for a Pitts, Smith, Waddle, Chase at that point.
And I don't think that they're trading out of that pick. Because they traded down and traded back up, I think they are locked in at number six if they don't trade up again for some reason.
And so if the first five picks go quarterbacks and then offensive line, that gives Miami their choice of offensive weapons. We'll just say it that way, receiving weapons. I'd assume, and that's dangerous, but I'd assume because they have Mike Gesicki already, that they would take Ja'Marr Chase there. Maybe they take Waddle, but I would assume they take Ja'Marr Chase there. That brings us to the Lions at seven. The Lions at seven, they're a true wild card because they're the Lions, but they just drafted a tight end in the top 10 2 years ago. You can't draft
two tight ends
in the top 10 in a 3 year span. Like, that's just asinine. Now, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but it would seem that it wouldn't. So that's the way they fall to eight in the Panthers, right? And now maybe the Panthers aren't willing to make a move. Maybe they're saying, you know what? We've got Pitts. We've got Waddle. We've got Micah Parsons. You know, we've got an offensive lineman that they desperately need. Like, we've got all of these choices that, you know, we're not going to trade out. But that's probably where it is going to be. Either that or maybe with the Broncos, but I would assume they're looking towards a quarterback there. If one falls, you know, a Mac Jones type. So it's a scenario where if the first five picks, there's no skill position outside of quarterback taken, I have to assume Pitts is going to make it right around that 7, 8, 9 area, which is prime real estate to move up and get him. Now, the question is, one, do you trade, as you said, two first rounds and a second round pick? Let's just say that's what it takes. It takes 16 this year, next year's number one, and then, I doubt they would trade 49 this year just because they don't have any more picks.
Right. Well, the simulator of the draft networks for number eight, all it took was this year's first and next year's first.
Okay,
and then, so number nine, it was this year's first and next year's second. So that becomes really palatable, especially if even giving up next year's first and joining the NFC West and not having a pick in the first round, if you believe Pitts is that special player to really add a dimension to their offense you haven't ever had, it's intriguing at least. Number nine, even more intriguing. Because then you just give up next year's second. But what a simulator says and what draft day costs actually end up being are always a little bit different. So that's a tough call.
My only concern with that is, and it might be, I mean, people might say I'm crazy, and maybe I am, is that you're now asking and putting a lot of pressure on him as well. Obviously, there's loads of pressure on all first round picks, but I feel like you're asking for trouble if you basically are saying, hey, you're our guy, especially if you do give up more than, you know, two first, you know, if you end up giving up two first and a second or two first, a second and a third, like you give up big numbers. That's a lot of pressure on a young guy. And Pitts is young, but he's legitimately a freak of nature too.
Now, after Pitts, you go on to potentially round two. I know that Pat Freiermuth is a guy that you like. You believe is probably a really good fit for the Cardinals at 49. The question is if he's going to be there. Other than Freiermuth, is there any other tight end worth 49. Another couple of names that are out, the Brevin Jordan, out of Miami. Tommy Tremble, he's not really a second rounder, but he's probably going to fall in that 3-4 perhaps. But who are the other tight ends like for day two who could be in that range for the Cardinals?
I think that's it. Freiermuth is really it at 49. Even Brevin Jordan would be kind of a reach. I personally would take Tommy Tremble over Brevin Jordan. I think he's clearly a better blocker, and he's just as good of an athlete while having the upside of not being utilized a ton as a tight end. While he was at Notre Dame, he was used more as an H-back fullback type, so they didn't have to throw him the ball. And I don't know how many of you guys pay attention to Notre Dame football, but
Seth's family does, though.
my wife's family does, and I also pay attention to the fact that they literally have a tight end drafted every single year.
And the only one that doesn't work out is the one the Cardinals took in Troy Nicholas, just by the
right.
way.
Right, exactly. So when you look at it from that perspective, I think you have to enjoy the fact that this is a good tight end class, but again, it's probably in that 70 to 100 range. You mentioned Brevin Jordan, you mentioned Tommy Tremble, you've got a Hunter Long out of Boston College who's more of a Max Williams type of player. You're going to hear that kind of be the comparison for these guys. Pat Freiermuth reminds me of Kyle Rudolph, actually, kind of a bigger physical guy. Then from there, you've got just intriguing kind of different fits. Luke Farrell out of Ohio State is a big physical guy that you can get on day three. You look at Matt Bushman out of BYU coming off a knee injury. But he's a guy that I really, really like. Like, he's my sleeper pick.
Football because he served a mission. So he's already 25 years old. So that's.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, for a day three pick, one contract, I'm fine with that. Like, and so, you know, you look at it from that perspective, I think he could be a guy that really, really fits. So, yeah, I think those are the guys that are intriguing to me. If I had to rank them in order, obviously Pitts is your one. I might prefer Tremble over Freiermuth just because he might be a guy that offers you a little more versatility.
If
he is a phenomenal blocker.
Yeah, with Tremble, what makes him intriguing? Think Hawkinson, George Kittle. And you've got, because Tremble played behind Cole Kmet, and then was it Michael Mayer? All big time freshmen. And so wasn't Hawkinson and Kittle at the same school? And everybody loved Hawkinson, but Kittle's the big time player.
Right. And so that's, you know, that's how I would look at it. A similar type of situation. Tommy Tremble's the guy that, if I could build kind of the perfect scenario draft, it would be trade down from 16 to about 24, pick up a third round pick, and then you draft, for me, now obviously this is for me, but you draft Najee Harris, you take a Paulson Adebo at 49, and then you take a Tommy Tremble at, like, you know, 70 something, or 80 something, where you fill three big needs with three top talent type guys. And so that's how much I like Tommy Tremble. Now, that being said, if Pat Freiermuth is there at 49, I don't hesitate to take him. I think he is at worst Max Williams healthy. And I think he has a chance to be, like I said, Kyle Rudolph. I don't see the baby Gronk that
actually hates the name.
Right. But I do see a Kyle Rudolph like talent there.
Coming up next on the Res of C Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to the offensive line. Cardinals have it. You're not getting a ton of chatter about the offensive line, but it is a possibility in round one. Who are the guys to know, both day one, day two, and late in the draft? That's coming next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The top tackle prospects are there. There are three top tackle prospects that pretty much go almost every time before the Cardinals pick. That would be Northwestern's Rashawn Slater, Oregon's Penei Sewell, and then Virginia Tech's Christian Darrisaw. Darrisaw sometimes falls, and it feels like Daniel Jeremiah talks about Slater, and from what Seth and Justin said, their guest on the podcast, Doug Farrar over at Touchdown Wire, while Penei Sewell is kind of the guy that you entered this year is kind of the generational type left tackle prospect, it might actually be Slater. But Slater and Sewell are probably your 1A, 1B, whatever, which one you might like a little bit more. Darrisaw dropping a little bit. Do you think any of those three have a chance, like, more than anything? Darrisaw, would he be a guy that would be worth considering with the 16th pick?
No, and we talked about this, and so I highly recommend, so we're going to do a run through this offensive line, but I highly, highly recommend, if you're interested in any of the offensive linemen, that you check out the original Draft Breakdown podcast that we did, episode 106 or 107, I believe. It's Sulling the Offensive Line. That's what the title of it is. So when you listen to Sully break it down, we talked about Christian Darrisaw, and I actually left Darrisaw out of my top five. And again, I talk to these guys behind the scenes. Jess and I talk behind the scenes all the time. And so I talked to Sully about Darrisaw. Sully is a Virginia guy, so he's watched Christian Darrisaw play for a long time. At Virginia Tech, obviously. And when he told me he worried about Darrisaw, I immediately was like, okay, if your concern is his desire, that to me is a huge red flag, because one of the things that we've talked about a little bit is that they probably won't see any of these guys play this year. Even if it was a Rashawn Slater, who we think is the best offensive lineman in the draft, you probably won't see him in the lineup. Maybe he gets that right guard position, but for the most part, it seems like they're set. So I would not take Darrisaw, because if your concern is his being into it and all of that, I just don't see how you can justify bringing him in to a situation where it's just so unlikely he's going to play.
In the next kind of tier, well, guys that kind of are around where the Cardinals pick, we've seen USC's Elijah Vera Tucker projected more as a guard. Many think he'll be a great guard, and he probably could hold up a tackle. Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State is a guy that Seth really likes. Are those kind of the two guys you would peg there into that 16 that the Cardinals could look at and would be worth taking a look at?
Yeah, and Jenkins is a guy that we discussed at length on the podcast last night. We also did discuss Elijah Vera Tucker. So it couldn't be more contrasting in styles. Elijah Vera Tucker is a finesse offensive lineman, and that typically gets a bad rap, right? Like, oh, that means he's not good. But he's just not a nasty physical guy.
His play is really clean, though.
Right, he's smooth. He's light on his feet. He does a lot of things well. Tevin Jenkins is an ass kicker. Like, he is a down home country boy, gonna get in your face and fight with you for four quarters type of player. And I mean, we've talked about that a little bit with the Cardinals in general. I think that's what's missing from their offensive line. I think that they miss that was what J.R. Sweezy brought in 2019 that he lacked in 2020 because of the health issues and performance issues. They need somebody with kind of a mean, nasty streak.
Didn't they add that, though, in Rodney Hudson and Brian Winters? Whether Winters starting, right. But that's kind of what they added there.
Yeah, and Jenkins is a guy, I mean, again, he's not going to play. He's a guy I want on the team. Like, at the end of the day, that's what, you know, a lot of times when you just look at it, he's a guy you just want on this roster because that's how talented he can be. I think he, you know, Sully talked about it quite a bit. I know he's a right tackle at Oklahoma State, and he did a great job there. Sully thinks he can play left tackle too because he's that good. So that makes a huge deal. But Jenkins is a guy, and Sully really did say this best. He's a guy, he's the most advanced run blocker in this class already, and he's a very good pass protector as well. So when you look at what the Cardinals are doing, and you know, you kind of mentioned it, leaning into that offense, isn't that what they need? They need a guy that does both at a high level. And when Jenkins is already, like, far and away the best offensive or run-blocking offensive lineman, isn't that kind of what you're looking for? And so that, you know, that would be those guys. Then you go into the kind of next group. You know, you've got the you've got the Jalen Mayfield out of Michigan, Alex Leatherwood, excuse me, easy enough to say, from Bama. You've got the Dylan Raduns, who I've never watched play, I'm not going to lie, outside of the Senior Bowl. Samuel Cosmi, who I actually like quite a bit, coming out of Texas. And then you've got a couple interesting names. A couple names that at 49, you wrote about it, I think could fit. Liam Eichenberg out of Notre Dame. We talked about Eichenberg last night too, when we talked about these two players. So we talked about Eichenberg, and then we discussed the kid out of BYU, Brady Christensen, who's like flying up draft boards at this point. Eichenberg, and Sully really breaks this down, so I don't want to do it a disservice, so I just go listen to it. But Eichenberg's a guy that Sully thinks is going to have to move into guard because of the way he plays. And so I'll let Sully kind of break that down if you want to get into the podcast. He talks about his style with his upper body and his hands quite a bit. So it's really intriguing. Whereas Christensen is a guy that Sully thinks can stay at left tackle. You know, both of them are guys that measured in big, you know, 6'6", 305, and then Christensen 6'6", 303-ish. But both of them are, you know, Eichenberg's the guy that they talked about moving inside. So if he's at 49 and you don't know for sure who's playing right guard yet, doesn't that make sense? Or, you know, you want to have a guy ready to go for once, if in case Kelvin Beachum, you know, at his age kind of falls off, if Justin Pugh can't stay healthy. Like, again, drafting offensive linemen is never a bad investment, ever.
There's an interior guy, a guy that maybe is less of an importance now. That would be Oklahoma's Creed Humphrey, with the addition of Rodney Hudson and extension, so he's now under contract for 3 years with the Cardinals. Maybe the center's not necessarily a focus, but Humphrey could also give you some depth there at guard. As you kind of look forward, kind of that guard position, they're kind of in flux because they don't really have anything set at either position beyond this year. Creed Humphrey is a guy that many people like. Other than that, is there anyone else worth mentioning there at 49 before we start going, you know, day three late guys?
Alex Leatherwood, I mean, we mentioned him. I think, again, you talk about a guy that can play anywhere, just a bad dude along the line. I think he could be a fit playing at either guard position or right tackle. I don't think he's a guy you draft to play left tackle, but you probably don't need to, the way DJ Humphries has come on the last couple of years. So that would be the only other guy that I would kind of look at.
So then moving on to your day three, guys, these are the names that Sully in particular gave you guys to look forward late in the draft. Now, I do get the feeling that because if you know something about the Cardinals, four out of the last five years, the Cardinals have drafted an offensive lineman on day three. That's four out of the last 5 years. They do a lot. It was Josh Miles 2 years ago. It was Corey Christensen the year before that. They've, you know, in the years past, Cole Toner, Will Holden, Evan Bain. All these guys that they're taking in day four, they love to get guys that they can try and develop kind of for the following year. A name that's interesting, what was it? Chase Gardner, is it? Chase Green? A guy that they, based on what they, that Kugler had a long meeting with him, is probably a guy that they're going to look at. But who are some other names to know?
So some of the, were you talking about Carson Green?
Carson Green, yes.
From Texas
A&M?
Yes,
that's the guy.
Okay. I was like, Chase, that's...
I keep messing up his name. I'm like, who is it? Chase? No, it's Carson Green.
So a couple of names to know. Deontay Smith out of Eastern Carolina. Undersized guy, but kind of super athlete. Really, really, really physical type of guy. A guy that you'll hear Sully rave about, Ben Cleveland out of UGA, out of Georgia. I don't think you can ever really go wrong with SEC offensive linemen, right? Like they tend to turn out pretty well, especially day three picks. He's an interesting one because I guess he's a good old honky tonk boy. Likes to carry a buck knife to clean his teeth in between like meals and stuff like that. Like again, couldn't you just see him and Rodney Hudson just laughing it up and like he looks his cut, he looks like if anybody watched Game of Thrones, he looks like the Mountain off of Game of Thrones. Like he's just a big, just massive dude at 6'6", 335. So he's one to know. And then another guy that Sully mentioned was Sardarius Hutcherson out of South Carolina. He really liked Hutcherson. So, I mean, I think when you look at this class, especially the kind of day three guys that we just kind of ran through, there's going to be a lot to choose from. And I think there's going to be some choices for the Cardinals. One last guy that Sully kind of raved about was Kendrick Green out of Illinois. He's a guard. He's the guy that went viral on Twitter with his workout. He was doing those like reverse leg curl things where like he would go all the way down till and like hold himself off the ground and he doesn't touch it and his like abs are crazy. At 6'4", 330 pounds. So, you know, he's kind of a freak of nature physically as well. So when you look at it, we talked about the insane testing from the skill position, but there were some guys, and I don't, again, when I bring up this name, I don't want this to get confused. But there were some guys that tested a lot, like Tristan Wirfs, who was a complete just freak of nature last year at the Combine. If you remember back last year, Wirfs was my number four overall prospect, and he showed why while he was at Tampa Bay as the best rookie offensive lineman for a offensive line class of rookies that was insane.
Well, let's wrap up this part. Coming next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's touch on just a little bit as we're going kind of long on this show, but let's talk a little bit about quarterbacks. I don't think the Cardinals will draft one, but it's still worth talking about. So that's coming next, Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're almost certain the Cardinals will not select a quarterback at any point in the draft. They already have four quarterbacks on their roster. They've got Kyler Murray, they're not looking early. They signed a veteran backup in Colt McCoy. They still got Chris Streveler, and then they added Cole McDonald. That's a lot of quarterbacks on the roster. Maybe they do an undrafted one to bring in, but it looks like they're kind of already set at the position. That said, quarterback is always intriguing. We pretty much know that the top two are Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson going to the Jaguars and the Jets. But after that, there's kind of some fun because San Francisco, while it seems like all the big draft guys seem to think that it's going to be Mac Jones. I will say this. I was on a podcast this last week. It wasn't even about the 49ers, but one of my colleagues of the NFL Wire from Niners Wire, Kyle Madsen, talked about the quarterback position. And it's actually of the three top guys left between Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones. Based on what Kyle Shanahan does with his offense, Trey Lance is actually the best fit in terms of his skills on offense because he's played under center. He does a lot of play action. And, you know, being the raw talent that he is, they've got Jimmy Garoppolo. It allows him to sit a year before he has to go in, and he's already got the experience of the offense. So while we're hearing Daniel Jeremiah, it sounds like Mac Jones is kind of the favorite. I'm not willing to say that it's certainly going to be him. And why? Like, I don't know. Mac Jones doesn't get me all that thrilled because maybe it's just the Alabama quarterback thing. We got Tua, but you look at Alabama quarterbacks and you've got more athletic options who have played. I don't know. Just they've had more experience starting. But I wouldn't rule out Trey Lance because I think fit wise, I'll throw that out to Kyle Madsen. He really kind of gave me a perspective that he would actually, in terms of skill set, work with what Kyle Shanahan wants more.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at it. I still think the pick is going to be Justin Fields, even with all of the smoke and everything. Fields and Shanahan have a...
There's the connection there from what was it called? I can't remember now.
I can't remember either. But yeah, they basically Shanahan quarterback collective.
That's it.
And Shanahan and his dad run that, and they've known Fields for years. In fact, I just got a text tonight that Shanahan talks to Justin Fields' quarterback coach almost every day. So, again, it doesn't mean anything, but this was similar to kind of the information we were getting from the Kyler Murray camp back in the day when we were getting this because someone that we knew the guy that was training him. And, you know, it just makes it odd because I'm not saying that the trainers, obviously they're getting paid, so there's money involved for them. But I think at the same time, it's just, you just look at it and kind of deduce these things as well. I look at the quarterback class as, you know, you've got obviously Trevor Lawrence, who's been anointed since day one. You're a pseudo BYU fan. Not really a BYU fan, but that's why I say pseudo.
I've got a daughter who goes to BYU, and so I paid attention to BYU football. Zach Wilson was pretty fun to watch. But my Mitch Trubisky? Question,
yeah. Well, and my big question has always been with Zach is that you play in the Mountain West and you were the guy for 3 years. Now I guess for 2 years, but I know the first year he didn't play a ton, but the second year I just, wonder.
It was weird because, like, he didn't separate himself until this year.
And that's where my question comes in, because it's interesting that a guy can, again, not separate himself or have one big year in a you know, lower level conference and then all of a sudden become the guy. So it's just interesting because you look at it, his single excellent year, phenomenal year. I don't want to take anything away from what he accomplished this year. Is it even as good as either of Justin Fields' two full seasons?
Probably not. But I think what's interesting about Wilson is this. Now, having followed the BYU season this past year, what made this tough on them is because of all they are an independent team in football, and they ended up having to remake their schedule completely. And so they ended up playing some really low end schools. They played some Mountain West teams. And then obviously the one blemish on their record was against East Carolina, which was one fantastic game. Coastal Carolina. That was a fun game to watch. But Wilson, like, it's just weird because he wasn't that good. And then he was now there was another quarterback who did that this past year. That would be Joey Burrow, who did the same type of thing, except he did it on an SEC team that was a national championship playing team and not in a weird COVID year where you had to fill your schedule with just teams that would be willing to line up and play. But it feels, in many ways, the meteoric rise of Zach Wilson is a lot like Joey Burrow, just under very different circumstances.
Yeah, and then you look at the Trey Lance situation. Lance only played one season. You've got a guy that didn't do, you know, much, and then had a phenomenal sophomore season, and then ended up being out with COVID because of the league he was in. And so I just, man, it's tough. It makes it harder on the evaluation because you've got, you know, as you said, a Wilson that bursts onto the scene. You've got a Trey Lance who only has 1 year of film. I mean, it's not like there's any other option. And then you have Mac Jones, who didn't light the world on fire when he took over for Tua. He did a good enough job, but I mean, is that what you want in a quarterback, you know, like a guy that just did a good enough job? And then you've got the guys in Lawrence and Fields who did it consistently for three seasons.
Right. And interesting enough, we were talking about the 49ers, who they're looking to upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo, and yet Mac Jones oddly looks like Jimmy Garoppolo, the way he plays, the way he throws the ball and things. So obviously you know that you can win with them. The 49ers went to the Super Bowl and had a lead in the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo, but that's exactly what they're looking to try and replace. So, yeah, I mean, Justin Fields makes sense. I mean, big program. Now, you've still got the stigma about Ohio State quarterbacks, which is, I mean, it's kind of nonsense at this point to still think about that, because there was the same thing about Big 12 quarterbacks, and look what we've gotten. Look what we've gotten the past 3 years. We've got Patrick Mahomes, we've got Baker Mayfield, we've got Kyler Murray. So,
right, and so I think at the end of the day, you just look at it and you look at the questions that, who would you not want the 49ers to draft? And that's how you kind of look at this class. And I think for me, obviously Trevor Lawrence, but I don't think they're going to have a chance at that, right?
I mean, we have to, come on. Urban Meyer's all but said that he's the guy.
And so obviously you don't want them to get Trevor Lawrence. So you go to the next guy and you say, okay, who is it? I think I would rather them take Jones or Lance over Fields. And that's kind of how I've made my decision on how I want this draft to go. Is I would much rather them take Mac Jones than than Justin Fields.
That's a good way to put it. Now, thinking about all the other quarterbacks, is there a quarterback in this draft worth a pick? The Cardinals only have 6 picks this year. Is there a quarterback worth throwing a 7th-round pick on?
Kellen Mond, maybe, but I doubt he'll be there. There was one other name that I wanted to mention. Or maybe... Yeah, I mean, maybe Mond. That's really it. I mean, this is... But I don't think he's going to be there in the 7th.
Probably not. And if that's the case, we know that day 3 quarterbacks are just maybe, with the rare exception. We don't get Tom Brady. That happens once in a lifetime. We don't even really get Dak Prescott more than once in a lifetime. So we've seen it. Like, it's kind of one per generation of fans. And so, at best, you're looking at a guy who you might have as a backup somewhere, sometime down the line. And, at this point, if you got your franchise quarterback, why waste the pick? And when you're looking to improve in other areas, you might as well pick up a guy who can play special teams.
Exactly.
I mean, draft a kicker, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Kicker in that case. Which, no, we're not going to do that. So, well, that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Savior podcast, an extended version, because we had a lot to talk about in terms of offensive prospects. We will be back again next week talking defensive prospects, and again the week after that to do our mock draft. And then the week after that will obviously be to talk about the Cardinals draft class. So we've got 3 consecutive shows coming up here in this off-season portion of the year. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jestro. Make sure to tune in again next week. Tune in to Seth's original draft breakdown podcast as well. Episode 107 is out now. Make sure to get signed up so you can get their special Patreon episodes, and they will have more to come in the weeks to come as well. Thanks for listening, and go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.